to the Age of Vision radio show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. From 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV radio, we relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision radio show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Fission radio show. Thank you for joining us. Today is March the 2nd, 2018. It's 8 o'clock in the morning here on the West Coast. And as usual, it's gray and cold until May. So thank you for joining us. Today we're filling in for Barry Prince, who has said he'll be back on the air with us next Friday. So we look forward to that. We are continuing our conversation with my co-host, Jerome Hebert, the Sane Environmentalist, about, I guess, the state of activism and, you know, the state of the world, basically. We sort of ramble into other things. We thought we'd open up the phone lines this morning, and in case anybody wants to give us a call, I think there's two phone lines that you could reach us on, so I'm going to give you them both, but my phone line is 718-717-8106. That's 717-8106. And the radio station's number is 718-717-8296. So maybe we'll hear from one or two of our callers in the next hour. In the meantime, if we don't, thanks for joining us, Jerome. We really appreciate it.
It's a pleasure to be here, Lonnie. I hope you're well.
I am. I'm feeling stronger and stronger every day. So I'm looking forward to the spring, I have to say. Ready for spring to spring.
Yeah, me too.
So, yes. You know, yesterday we were talking about the state of activism. And, it's interesting how I think we feel very depleted. And I listened to a podcast yesterday while I was working on Telesur English on YouTube, and it was from the Empire Files from Abby Martin, and she's that reporter from the Empire Files, and she was interviewing a congressional researcher named James DeAngelo. The title of this is kind of, this will tell you what how the conversation went. Empire Files: How Lobbyists Weaponized Transparency. Congressional researcher James DeAngelo research is congressional action, and he was talking about how the Legislative Reorganization Act of 1970 really had been closed door. But what it really did was allow the lobbyists to infiltrate. And that's when they started handing Congress like 1,000-page, 15,000-page pieces of legislation that nobody could read or understand. And then they would give them the little summary sheet. They'd build relationships with these people. They'd say, here's the legislation that's perfect for this issue, and here's your summary sheet, which is why our legislators don't actually read the legislation, frankly. And they are shocked. Like,
yeah, those summaries get turned into talking points that end up on the media and
exactly
and sold to the United people of the world.
Well, you know what's interesting is I remember when I first started paying attention, it must have been 2003 or 4. I woke up in 2000 when George Bush stole the election. And I started reading legislation, you know, because I was self-employed. I had the luxury of being at home watching C-SPAN. I would actually read the whole legislation. And there was I forget the title of the legislation, but there was some legislation about agriculture that I happened to be reading. And then on page six, it was like a 900-page document. And on page 600, buried deep into it, was a statement that said that was going to make organic, homegrown, organic gardens in your own backyard illegal. I was like, what? I called Representative, yeah, I was shocked. So I looked up the legislative members on the committee, and I started calling all the Democrats. And I said, Sheila Jackson Lee, I called her office. I called Loretta Sanchez from California. And I said, are you aware that, and I read the legislation. I read the actual, they're like, actually, we had never heard of that. And I said, well, this is still in committee. And so I called back 2 weeks later to find out the status of that. And actually, you know what had happened? The lady said that there was about 10 or 12 people who also called. And she said, you know, we've had a number of calls. And I'm like, well, how many? She's like, oh, about a dozen. And I'm like, okay. And she's like, well, we've actually moved it through committee to take that part of the legislation out of the act. So it, ironically, it took 10 or 12 people to read the legislation to move the act into being something healthier and better for us. And this is what this guy, James DeAngelo, was talking about yesterday. Nobody follows the legislation. I mean, at most, you know, they pass hundreds of laws a year and small pieces of legislation. They're constantly being busy. I mean, maybe there's 30, 40 big pieces of legislation, but people follow 10, 5 of them. You know what I mean? It's just too complicated. And he was saying that this is exactly how, this is why we're in the state that we're in, because of the way it's been reorganized.
And as well, that it's created in the past decade or two a culture within the House of Representatives and Congress where the younger ones have to spend 20 hours a week fundraising or else they don't get reelected.
They all have to spend that time.
So, and so don't they have to go off campus. So they have like sweatshops or where these representatives go to make money for their campaigns. And it seems to me that the whole thing is kind of a big kick in the ass to the populace of the United States. No matter what they do, they get it wrong. We're too diverse a population that may have even 50% happiness in any one decision. You know, and I think that there's a real need to break it all up, as it were, you know, into what is a regional solution to the problem. And you can handle regional problems better than you can handle global problems. And humanity is just, I saw, I believe it was an Apple commercial. And it showed a bunch of zombie-like people staring down at cell phone screens, not talking or doing anything, just staring at their phones. And I got to thinking, whoa, and there's other movies, you know, 1984 talked about that, about us getting to a point where what we're showing on a screen is now reality, where Big Brother is watching, and we know that, and it's okay. Because we have our screens. Without our screens, what would we do? We'd cry out for freedom. But screens dumb us down. They keep us on a low level of inquisition. And so they can do whatever the hell they want all around us as long as they give us a cutesy story to grab our mind and pull us in the direction away from the truth. Doesn't matter what direction. as long as it's away from what their plan is and knowing what their plan is. And that may sound insane, and I don't really give a damn, but I think there's something to it.
Well, there is something to it because it's pretty – I mean, the thing is, the curtain is being drawn back from Oz. We're seeing it now. It's not like being hidden anymore. And this is how audacious they are. They don't care if we know anymore. The power is so complete, they don't care what we say. It doesn't matter. And if someone really gets out of line, you get knocked off either physically or, you know, politically. You're no longer existent. I mean, attempt to get on the air on any of these, you know, any big major broadcaster. You know, they clip it out. And, you know, when Bill Clinton sold out the airwaves to the massive court, I mean, frankly, Bill Clinton did more harm to this country than any, I don't know, Trump is actually exceeding him. But prior to him, I think Clinton was far worse than George Bush in the harm that he did to this country, because he sold out the airwaves to the big media. He, you know, did the NAFTA deal that super screwed everybody in Canada and America and you know, south of the border. I mean, and we're having to pick up the pieces. This is the thing. This is why, like, Trader Trump is just so horrendous right now, because it takes a long time for us to pick up the pieces. The harm they do takes a long time.
The harm is still unraveling. Think it about is. It. The policies of NAFTA created mass illegal migration.
Yeah.
Both to United States and Canada. You know, and that has affected negatively.
Well, it also helped the so-called country. It also helps
and the donor countries, because they're losing good workers to another economy. They want their workers in their economy.
Well,
so if you have a failing economy and all your workers flee to another economy, well, then you're totally screwed now.
Well, the reason they fled is because American corporations were able to go down there and buy out all the local farmers. They basically destroyed their economy in Mexico. I mean, that's really essentially what we're talking about, is neoliberalism was forced, physically forced on South America and negotiated through NAFTA in Mexico. And it basically, you know, destroyed people's lives, destroyed huge, huge people's stability for centuries that they had as family members. And, you know, people don't immigrate from Mexico because they want to come to America because it's so great. They immigrate from Mexico because they're desperate.
They're desperate.
You know, and in Guatemala, people come because their lives are threatened. I mean, the United States had a very severe hand in training, through the School of Americas, the torturers that now control many of the South American countries. So it's, you know, we're having to pay the price of a lot of these legislative actions that are really done on behalf of the empire. Let's just be clear. I mean, it's... talk about American interests, we're not talking about Americans' values. We're talking about economic interests. Your stuff is our stuff. Whatever you own that we want, we get to have it. That's our interests. That's the American policy.
Yep.
So, and then, you know, then we have all these Americans who believe in the Constitution. We're standing up, like the kids, those kids recently on these gun rights, right? So I think it was South Carolina just passed a law to punish Delta Airlines for not giving discounts to the NRA. Now, why would the NRA be entitled to be getting a discount? Why would NRA members be entitled to a discount any more than you and I?
I don't know. Maybe they fly a lot.
I mean, I can understand why FedEx refuses to stop backing the NRA. I get that because of the shipping costs. Right? They're shipping all of their weapons. So no wonder they're going to give NRA members a discount. That, okay, I could get. But why would a Delta Airlines, why would Alamo Car? That's why I'm like all these companies. Dick, and frankly, I did contact Dick's Sporting Goods and tell them, thank you. Thank you for stopping to sell these weapons. It matters. I mean, it does matter. This is what it does matter. When people live in ethically, then we don't have to make the laws. We just have to have corporations making sensible decisions. That's my, you know, I mean, this is the thing. I mean, like Costco, I was thinking about this as I was listening to this thing was, you know, the CEO, the owner of Costco, He takes a salary of $500,000 a year, period. I mean, he could make millions, but instead he chooses to give it back to his employees in salaries. I mean, Costco's a good starting job. They start at $18, $20 an hour. You know, Costco's a good place to live. They give you good benefits. They give you good wages. And that's because the CEO pours the money back into the company, not just to his expanding the company, but to his employees in a real way.
Well, that's a unique thing and very un-American.
Well, I think it is very American. I disagree with you. I think what has happened in America was our legislators took on a very un-American attitude. I mean, it's basically fascism is what they've taken on. They basically take their directions from corporations, which is the classic definition of fascism. Let's be clear. That's, you know, when a government is at the behest of corporations and enforced by a military state, that's a fascist state. So I think, you know, we've been all living on this idea. This is kind of the disconnect, Jerome, is we've been living on this idea that we have had a government that's representing us. And it's we're now because we're all so polluted, we're like, you know?
Dumbed down with radiation.
Yeah, the radiation. You know, the radiation is an interesting thing because it has, it's really created, the Manhattan Project was extremely successful because it kept everybody from talking about it. And then Walt Disney did his due diligence and sold us the Friendly Atom. You know?
Yeah, they sold us that.
He sure did. I mean, there's a cartoon called The Friendly Atom. If you look at it, it is quite devious, if you ask me. So then the question of how do we really organize activism in America that's effective? You know what they did to the students in Washington, D.C.? This is hilarious. You know how they're calling for a march on Washington, D.C. for reasonable gun laws, March 24th? Instead of telling the students no, they just said, oh, there's already somebody else going to be using that venue. So they can't, no march permits allowed.
Is somebody else already in there?
Yeah, it was super. Let me see if I can pull up the story. It was some very frivolous march that has been turned down. I mean, really a silly little march for a talent show. That's what it is. They're bumped from the mall by a talent show that had already requested that day, a talent show.
Well, they could get another day.
Yes, they could get another day. My guess is that they're going to pick another venue. You know what I mean? Because the March 24th day is set. You know, people make their plans. March 24th is a Saturday. So, I mean, I venture to... Well, what I find ironic is on the Sunday, March 11th, is the 7-year anniversary of Fukushima, and it is raging out of control still. Not one little peep about that from anybody. And my guess is those students have no idea that it's raging out of control.
No. Well, how are they going to know? Log out of your YouTube account and get on YouTube and look around and just see what pops up.
That's right.
You know, you want to know where the state of the country is? Then it'll be a bunch of music videos and pop culture.
Just go to trending. Go look at what's trending. You know, that's how I found Logan Paul. I had never heard of Logan Paul, the kid that got, you know, he became a multimillionaire through YouTube. And they basically kicked him off of YouTube because he went into the Japanese suicide forest and filmed a guy who had hung himself and made fun of him. And that was kind of too, that's in fact when YouTube found its soul. When that event happened, when Logan Paul videotaped that guy and made fun of him, and then they had to take action because it was just too immoral. That's why this recent thing about, I mean, look, we've had the Sandy Hook, they called that a false flag, Boston false flag, which I think Boston was a false flag in my view. I don't think Sandy Hook was a false flag, but I do think Boston was. But all of those quote false flag things have been going on YouTube for years. So why now did YouTube all of a sudden decide with this newest, latest thing of the crisis actors and the false flags in Parkland, Florida, it's all about getting your guns, that was going on YouTube? Did they decide to take action? They kicked Richie Allen's show. Richie Allen's a pretty well-known radio show host in England. I mean, I followed his show all the time. And I don't always agree with him because I think he's kind of sometimes way, he sort of believes a lot, in my view, a lot of propaganda. But, you know, that's his opinion. I still value his guests and I listen to him. But YouTube kicked him off because he had some guy on who was claiming that this whole thing was a scam, like pretty much immediately. So anybody who claimed it was a scam, why did they do that? And I think it's because Logan Paul forced YouTube to get some kind of a soul. They had to draw the line. And, you know, it is censorship. It is censorship, you know, to kick Richie Allen off or anybody who says it's a false flag. It is. You know,
YouTube censors things heavily, you know, and they also expose other things to your enemies, I think.
Oh, for sure. And actually, they generate enemies.
As soon as I did a video entitled On the Origins of Global Warming, I had 50 experts on one video that just attacked me. I'm like, where did these people even come from? They're not subscribers. They're just out of the blue, all of a sudden, really calling me bad names and hateful, to the point where I actually made that video private so nobody else could see it.
Wow.
I felt I had to censor myself.
You know what would be interesting? I mean, delete all those comments.
I caused somebody to censor themselves.
Have you attempted to rename the video and see if the algorithms would still catch you? Because I think those are all bots, all those. That's what I think. When we get attacked on YouTube, like voraciously attacked, I think they're just bots. They're automated algorithms that pick up these names and then they put in, because some of the attacks don't actually equate, you know, to some of the things you say on the video. At least that's what my experience was, is some of them are just like attacks, just say stuff that you could say in almost any video. So I think that they were computer generated insults.
That's a thought. They could do it if they want.
And they do it. That's, you know, I've read that they actually do it. So, I mean, it's interesting because what they're trying to do, what they're really attempting to do, is get us from not looking at the real things that are causing harm on our planet, like the nuclear industry, like the chemical industry.
Looking at our screens is what they want us to do.
Hey, Jerome, you're fading out super far away.
Sorry, is this better?
Yes, that's a million times better. Much better.
Good. Yeah. So, you know, they want us to just look at our screens, and they don't want us to look at information that might be counter to their narrative, and therefore they censor. You know, that's why something that does show actually how it all started, not good or bad even, just this is how it started. This latest wave in the United States of global warming, and actually all over the world, got started by Al Gore and that movie, An Inconvenient Truth. That stunned the world. That shocked the world. And it put a lot of people into action. Okay. And
well, I think that there were scientists working on it before Al Gore, though. You know, he did bring it to the highlight, but I think...
And theirs was their argument. Well, this has been going on since the 40s and this and that and the other thing. And it's like, whatever. The latest wave is caused by Al Gore and this other guy who was his college professor and his one science class that he took that he failed. He got a D in it. He was not a good student in science. Al Gore doesn't understand science. That's documented. You know, he's a politician. He's not a scientist. And he created this wave, and I'm looking at the data, and the more I look at the data, the more I see that indeed there are issues going on in relationship to this, and some of them could get pretty bad pretty quickly. The Earth has what they call feedback loops, you know, we're in, let's say, we're my latest studies have been in the overall ice pack on the planet and how that's changing. And it is going downhill. And when it does, there are giant pockets of methane gel, frozen methane gel is what it is, under the polar ice caps. And they're basically capped off by the very coldness of the environment around them. And so this frozen reservoir, giant reservoirs of methane gas is encapsulated under the polar ice cap. When the polar ice cap melts and the general temperature increases, it will cause the plugs on these caps to blow, and they'll just start venting into the atmosphere. You know, and some of them could be gigantic volcano-sized eruptions of methane gas. It could change the entire environment of the planet Earth literally overnight, rise at 10 degrees in 1 week globally, melting all the ice right away. Places like North America, desert. Places like Mexico, desert. Around the equator, you'll have a little thin green band. Everything else, dead. And the storms along that thin band along the green zone will be extreme. So that could happen. Okay.
Well, and then we, you know what else is not being counted in that, though, is also basically like the leaks, the leaks of technological disasters like Fukushima. You know, the Macondo oil well out in the Gulf of Mexico is still leaking oil. They never really fully capped it. So there's, you know, we have these massive, massive pollutions going into it that is really harming the ecosystem. I mean, I've always contended that Fukushima is really harming the microscopic biodiversity in the Pacific Ocean. That's why we're seeing starving whales and starving seals, because they can't get the krill that they need, because the krill can't grow because the microorganisms that they feed on are no longer available. I read that normally the ocean has like a layer of about 20% dead sea animals, like at the bottom of the sea, there's always these dead carcasses from the animals being dead. It's risen up to 35% now since Fukushima's happened. So, and that, I don't know how accurate those numbers are, but that seems to make sense to me that we're in this cacophony of changes. This is why Guy McPherson says he has a grim outlook. He thinks that we're not going to make it even to 2050, right? As humans, he thinks the water's going to be too polluted. I mean, maybe this solar, maybe the ice, I mean, this is the interesting thing when you think about it. The Earth has a greater plan than all the stuff that, I mean, humans could be wiped off the face of the Earth, but the Earth will continue. It's not like we're going to take it away.
Yeah, we've got millions of years. That's something that we just don't grasp, is that this planet has been around for millions of years.
Billions,
and did you know now that they have actually created life in a test tube? They put together the biochemical components of life and added energy in some way and created a eating, pooping, self-replicating life form. Or replicating, maybe not self, I don't know, but replicating, expanding life form,
well,
which would evolve, that had DNA, that had their own custom DNA.
You mean that's DNA. Different than cloning?
So what that tells, no. They created a life form out of stolen the DNA that they altered to create the life form.
Oh, yeah, that's really great. That's really...
Well, that, what that tells me is this, though. I mean, that's... keep in mind, I try to look at things scientifically and not get too involved in the whole, social thing. But basically, that tells me that life will exist in any environment that has certain basic chemical components to it. It'll evolve. It will happen. And so, despite what we think, it could get all wiped flat. And as long as the chemicals are still here to start it all, it can get going again. So... we're so small and insignificant, and we think we're all that and all and special, but we really are just a silly animal running around with very hot fire sticks, polluting and lighting everything on fire, and that we're going to burn ourselves up. That's basically it. And when that happens, life will go on. And
I think ooh, such a cheerful show today, eh, Jerome?
Life will go on.
I wonder if we have any listeners left halfway through the show. So if we do have any listeners left and anybody wants to give us a call, the number is 718-717-8106 or 8296. So give us a call, 718-717-8106. We'd love to have a chat with you. In the meantime, we're going to keep on making your morning bright and cheery. I mean, this is the thing. We do have to face it. I mean, I think actually...
Well, it's a shock thing, and that's what it is. Remember what Claudia was saying the other day? That you got to shock people by any means necessary into understanding the gravity of the situation. You know, and maybe that is it. People need to understand that, my God, this is... You could no way it couldn't happen that fast. So look it up. Look it up.
And it's happening.
Already
well, you know, we've had a
methane on the northern continent that warm areas of a dozen square miles to 60 degrees in the middle of October in Greenland on the ice sheet. 60 degrees in one little pocket. And it just floats along at 60 degrees. That's how quickly and how obviously methane warms the atmosphere. It's one of the primary. It's as bad almost as water vapor. Yeah. You know, because water vapor has a kind of a negative feedback loop where it builds up too much and then it rains and that cools stuff down, you know, through evaporation. But still, that's just, it's sad. It is sad.
It is a shock. I mean, we've been asleep for 100 years since the turn of the, you know, I mean, what was interesting at the Industrial Revolution, finally, children got out of the slave trade. You know what I mean? Children no longer had to work in the mills and in the mines. And we stood up for women and people thought they got their rights. And all the meantime, they're developing these programs. Like John Goffman basically said in one of the readings that I read, ever since they discovered radioactivity, they started testing babies in hospitals. Every baby born between 1900 when they discovered it and 1940, if you were in a major hospital in a big city, your child got tested with radioactive levels. They used to x-ray children and not even tell the parents. It wasn't even until 1940 that it dawned on them that they ought to ask for permission. For real. I mean, that, and imagine, that's just one industry. I mean, think of all the things. And frankly, even like look at makeup. You have to, women who wear, I wear makeup. You have to wear makeup and look. They sell lipstick with high levels of lead and zinc in it. You know, the redder the lipstick.
Lipstick is disgusting.
Yes, it is really disgusting.
This, from a man's perspective, lipstick is gross because it tastes bad.
Well, some men like it, so wipe, you know what I mean?
Off.
Let's just be clear.
First thing we do, wipe that lipstick off. Get that stuff off of there.
Let's get serious. But I'm just saying, like, what we've been, you know, and one of the things that really has really harmed our country is the destruction of the family and really the destruction of men. Like this, I tell people over and over again, please search out this documentary called Tough Guys, G-U-I-S-E. Men were socially engineered starting at the turn of the century, the 30s, when they realized on the radio that they could manipulate society through the mass media, they did, and they got very serious about it. And they really focused on changing people's roles because there was no way they wanted liberated men. So they cornered men into being these bullies, and the whole tough guy's persona was sold and forced on people, just like the Barbie doll idea was forced on women in the same subliminal way. That's why people don't even recognize they're doing it. I mean, it is time for us to liberate ourselves and be true human beings. And be honest. And I think, frankly, I think that's where our hope lies. I think once we start recognizing each other as equals and as loving human beings and focus on love, focus on helping each other, and focus on generating positive ideas to combat these solutions and unite and hold hands and refuse to back down, it's not going to be easy. We have to be, you know, tough as nails. We have to, like, stand up to them. We have to be willing to take their hammering. But I think if we can give people the courage, that's why I say put your courage feet on, because it's not easy. It is not an easy task to walk with courage. It doesn't mean you're not afraid. It doesn't mean you're not intimidated. It just means you go do it because it's the right thing to do. It's the ethical. Ethics and integrity have been lost because people want a paycheck. Because they want to have their, you know, diamond rings, and they want to have the gold around their neck, and they, you know, like the stupid things that people do with themselves. I don't know.
Yeah, it wastes a little energy on.
But, you know, once they realize, you know, what did, who was it, the Smokey Robinson song, "Come on, honey, let's drink that money," you know? Like, at a certain point, all the money in the world is not going to save you.
No.
What saves us?
But it would be nice, at least for a week or two, to have all the money in the world. Probably I wouldn't spend a whole lot.
We'd probably spend a whole lot. I'd spend a whole lot if I had all the money in the world. You bet. I'd actually buy up major corporations. That's what I'd do.
Yeah, you would go nuts.
I would. I'd like
sit there and go, well, we got all the money in the world. I guess I don't have to worry about lunch.
No, I'd get busy, like, creating social change. That's what I'd do. I mean, can you imagine if we actually unleashed our scientists to really discover the cures? I did an interview with a guy called Truth on Monday, and he's going to come back next month. He used to work at a nuclear power plant, and he built them. He was in construction, and he basically said when he found things that weren't right and he wrote his reports, they basically told him to rewrite it. They said, you can't write it like this. And he ended up, you know, getting transferred and quit. I mean, and the reason he's speaking out is he worked doing this for 10 years, and he believes that the chemicals that he was exposed to is causing a lot of his physical disabilities, and nobody's even acknowledging it. He's very frustrated because he can't get any assistance. So if they had just tidied up the deal, so a lot of these whistleblowers, a lot of people who are speaking out, it's because not only did they work in an industry that poisoned them, but after they left, nobody's willing to help them. So this is how backwards thinking these industries are. You know, it's one thing to tell people to shut up while you're working and cause them to get sick, but if you don't take care of them, someone's going to squawk. They're not all going to be intimidated. So
Did you ever see that YouTube video I did about the Rocky Flats worker?
Yes, I did. Rocky Flats is a very interesting place. I mean, that goes to show you, though, Jerome, how many places in our country are totally poisoned. I mean, off the top of our heads, we can probably name 10 places immediately. I mean, there's 167 Superfund sites.
Concentrations of radionuclides are California coast and Oregon, Washington coast, and the Colorado Plateau. Did you know that? It's like the second or third highest level of radiation in the United States. And back east, it's pretty high. In the southeast as well.
It's high everywhere. Yeah. I mean, what did the EPA just identify? 150 sites that urgently need funding and money, and yet the budget has cut, the proposed budget from the Republicans is cutting back the Superfund cleanup site. They want to take $10 million away from Hanford, for cleaning up Hanford. They want to take money away instead of investing more. It's kind of beyond comprehension, but this is our reality. This is the true reality of it all, you know?
Well, we the people, you know, and I guess we do our doom and gloom, but people need to understand the doom and gloom and what's really happening, and that's why I call myself the sane environmentalist, because I try to figure out what's really happening and report on that. I guess I do okay at that. Not great, but, you know, I'm calm. People have often commented, well, your calming voice helps to understand this shocking subject. Thank you for not being overly emotional and freaked out.
The thing that I like about your YouTube channel is your interpretation of science, because I am not a science person. So you very articulately explain the science. You know what I mean? You do your research and you talk about, well, this is this, like the radionuclides and how they actually worked. I'd been following this for like 5 years, and until, that's why I asked you to be on the show with me, because until I heard you do some explanation about what, you know, you had just discovered Fukushima, so you were doing your research, and you did a video very spontaneously, very honestly and authentically about what your interpretation, and it finally clicked, like, oh, that's how that stuff works. Like, I'm a super, as all of my listeners know, non-scientific person. I go by my gut level on this stuff. I mean, I'm not dim-witted. I can understand it, but I don't quite get the science. I don't have that high retention. And, you know, these are complicated issues, and they're intended to be complicated issues intentionally. They're intended to baffle us so that we don't pay attention. And we have been programmed to not pay attention.
On the nature of the construction of matter itself, that's understandable. That people, the layman doesn't understand what is a proton and a neutron and a nucleus and what is an electron, and what does an electron do in an atom, and why does that make a difference? And physics is a whole thing. I mean, and it is extremely complicated, and you kind of got to start out at the most complicated, and that is understanding what is matter and how is it all connected, you know? And I tell my listeners that all the time. The carbon in the atmosphere is the life of our biosphere. The carbon gets absorbed by the plants, animals eat the plants, we eat the animals and the plants, and therefore we poop. Therefore life goes on. So the bottom line is that it all comes from carbon. It comes from an element that is in the air, and you can't see it, you can't feel it, you can't taste it, but it is responsible for all life on this planet, for all the biomass. And I think people don't understand that. They think carbon dioxide, they think this they don't think of a solid, that it is a solid, that it moves from gaseous to solid. The carbon atoms themselves reintegrate into new matter. They're like the building blocks, if you will, of new matter. The carbon is. It's amazing that you could take something like carbon, which is, we know, is a black, yucky substance, and convert it into a rose petal. How does that happen? You know? And how is that? And then something eats the rose, and boom, the carbon integrates into that being. And then something eats that, and the carbon integrates into that being. Some of it goes back into the environment, of course, every time. So it is, and as we use carbon, we exhale the excess that we don't need. And that goes back into the atmosphere. So it's a magic circle. It really is. And it all boils down to understanding the basics of how it all works. What is carbon? What is carbon dioxide? A lot of people think of it as a poisonous gas. I disagree. You know, it has the unique ability to be the thing, the tipping moderator, if you will, in the climate system of the Earth. Carbon is the tipping moderator. It's the final straw, if you will, that causes all the other changes to transform the climate. At this point, you have to balance carbon with the fact that the sun is increasing in volume, and the radiance from the sun is increasing in volume, and the Earth is warming just because the sun's getting hotter. And if it wasn't for the fact that carbon had dropped precipitously over the last eons, we would be in a Venus-like situation right now. So, you know, it's all based on carbon dioxide. So, you know, as I said, carbon is the thing of life. It is the root element of everything that exists that we understand. And without it, life could not exist. I really believe that. I think that is one of the prerequisites for life, is some sort of a carbon. Could be maybe a silicone, but probably carbon-based oxidizing method or something like that to get energy, because you got to be able to metabolize energy as a life form. So carbon's perfect for that because it picks up oxygen so easily, and it oxidizes, releasing heat energy into, or whatever, you know, and so that is interesting. So that's what I'm studying right now, and I'm studying how that is affecting the ice on our planet, and the ice on our planet is indeed melting, and that is at an alarming rate as well, and I've studied this, okay? I've gone through the haters, I've gone through the lovers, and I've studied the science on both sides.
Well, the downside to the ice melting is those nuclear power facilities. To me, that's right. The worst. Around every continent, there's a nuclear power facility. And all, you know, like, right. You know, if it rises, I mean, and frankly, I saw this article that said Florida's spending a lot of money keeping the sand on its beaches, more money than it's actually bringing in. It's costing Florida money to stay afloat because the oceans are creeping up on Florida, right? But that's going to happen all around the entire continent of the United States and every other continent with the ice melting, the oceans are going to rise. We have these nuclear facilities that, you know, we mentioned this yesterday, like this is a grave. With 311 coming on, I'm stunned that not more people are talking about 7 years of nonstop nuclear meltdown, China syndrome going on. And we continue to read stories where they're saying, oh, people are moving back into Fukushima Prefecture. They are not being moving back in. They are being coerced back in because the Japanese government basically told
you lose your check.
Well, not only that, they're being told if you don't move back in, you have to pay TEPCO back for the rent they've been paying for you for the last 5 years. So families are moving back in because they've been coerced. They lost everything. And now they're being coerced by the Japanese government. It's not, and it's the IAEA. Let's just be clear. Who runs the show? The International Atomic Energy Agency. They tell everybody what to do. And who rules that show? The industrial military complex. Because they want weapons of war. I mean, this was a very interesting talk about Putin yesterday coming out saying he has, you know, making this fear-mongering sort of Cold War rhetoric about, you know, well, I can send a nuclear bomb across to the United States and nobody could even touch us, you know? I mean, it's actually such a shock that we are in this state where people are not even paying attention to the real threats that nuclear contamination is posing to life on our planet. This is not some made up thing. People are dying of cancer. People have autoimmune disease. I mean, things are happening to people at a really grave level.
My lungs are a good example of a damage from geoengineering. I mean, my lungs have been fine for years living in Colorado. And I get here, and after about 2.5 months, they start really geoengineering, and I'm still hacking and coughing, and a lot of people are still hacking and coughing.
Well, you're in Arizona, right?
Yeah. Right.
Arizona's considered like one of the most...
geoengineering.
You know, that reminds me, speaking of geoengineering, you know, the East Coast is about to get hit with a big, gigantic storm. Something inside me tells me that was probably geoengineered and not real, you know?
And they said rain in Vermont. Rain in Vermont in March... is unheard of.
Right. I was thinking about Southern California now because the weather's really nice and warm there. Like, what's it going to be in the summertime? How hot are those people going to get? I mean, in Arizona last year, planes couldn't fly because the asphalt was melting. It's funny, but it was like, wow, that's some pretty hot asphalt.
That is, isn't it? That's scary. When it gets to that point, then you know that. So you turned me on to Gerard Cañete Hay.
Yeah.
Right?
And he interviews with us here regularly. Yeah, he's a pretty interesting man.
I like him.
Yeah.
I like his outlook on things. I think he's a realist. Mm-hmm. He's another sane individual.
Yeah, and he is, and that's his whole thing is like, let's just be reasonable.
Exactly. Let's be reasonable and not be fooled by the machine. You know, and you got to perpetuate that. That's why we do the reporting we do. That's why now I'm going to do, even though I'll get hated on, 2018, 7 years later, where are we video for Fukushima today, probably. You know, so that I think that, and I'll get hated on for that, but a lot of people will watch it. That's interesting. You know, anything with that you put Fukushima in the title gets immediately 50 to 100 watches on YouTube. It's amazing. It's almost like people have, they're sitting there searching for it.
It's the bots.
I think they are.
I think it's the bots. I think they are automatic bots. I mean, I really believe that they're automatic bots.
And you know, the first thing that watches any video you make.
Yeah, because they pick up the key words. And that's why we get a lot of negative comments on it. Because we're not allowed. I mean, the bottom line is. Well, Jerome, let's be clear. The overlords do not want us talking about it. They don't want us telling people that Fukushima is not fixed, that we are super screwed on nuclear pollution throughout the United States and the world, that the people who are running the show really have no regard for human life. They don't want us talking about that. And they don't want us telling people, look, we have power. We can stand up for ourselves. We can find solutions, because solutions are out there. And they're going to be very difficult to implement as long as we have our hands tied behind our back.
Yes, and we agree to have our hands tied behind our backs.
Pretty much.
Agree to that. You know, that's part of our screen thing.
Well, it's part of our training. Like we need to have a certain level of comfort. You can't just live in high anxiety all the time. You flip out. So you have to to be able to, like,
Gerard posted something interesting. How to overthrow a people? You scare the crap out of them, and then while they're scared, you take everything that they'll let you steal.
That's right. I mean, you know, there's a book called Propaganda written by what was his name? Bernard. His last name. I'm going to Google it, but people should read it. It was written in the 30s. It was called Propaganda, by Bernays. And this is when they really realized that they could actually control the population through propaganda. They've implemented all of those things. We are the net result of it on a mass scale. And the bottom line is, people are only speaking out when they get uncomfortable. Those students didn't start speaking out before somebody went onto their campus and shot them full of holes. You know, we didn't start speaking out until Fukushima went berserk, and now it's 7 years later, and nobody's stopping it. I mean, there used to be a lot of
YouTubers. Because nobody knew it existed.
Interestingly enough, the intimidation on the Fuku fighters is gigantic, because there used to be lots of videos about Fukushima, and now there's practically none. And not only that, the Japanese secrecy laws put a big lid on the information that we're entitled to know. And that is when it really began, you know, like that's when it really began to get controlled, was when the Japanese put in those secrecy laws. We already have secrecy laws here in the United States. Those secrecy laws are inside the NRC, which is why that Truth, who was on my show on Monday, even though he was just constructing a nuclear facility, when he saw things wrong, they told him to rewrite it. That you couldn't put in those types of comments into it because it would cause a cost overlay. It would cost too much, and it would cause a delay. And they were talking about getting paid, having to pay 1% interest or 2% interest on their billion-dollar loans if they didn't meet their deadlines. So instead of paying a 1% interest, if they would have done things correctly, they would have had to take a 2% interest, and that would have cost them millions of dollars, and they were not willing to do it. So instead, they instructed all of their employees to not just report things. That's standard procedure. That's standard procedure at the NRC. And everybody working for them knows it and accepts it. Because they want to get paid that $100,000, $150,000 a year. $200,000, $300,000.
How is that organization, how is the Nuclear Regulatory Commission or the EPA? I can see the Superfund thing, but mostly that's just what the EPA is doing, is just allocating money to other people who are doing the work, just like at Hanford. You know, the Nuclear Regulatory Administration and the EPA are basically just co-opting the work to private contractors. Okay, and the private contractors are the ones that are actually responsible for doing the work and for any errors that occur. You know, such as Hanford, you know, is a great example of that. The contractor at Hanford, in order to save money, did two things wrong. He pushed forward too fast and did not build a giant tent over the entire plutonium refinishing plant in order to demolish it in a safe and contained way. They figured, we'll just spray this foam on it and that'll stop the dust. Well, guess what? Now they're finding plutonium in guys' shoes, in their cars, in the rugs of their houses, in other places.
I venture to say, if they looked for plutonium, we'd find plutonium in lots of places, Jerome. They don't even test for it. And, you know, I called up, what was the university? Must have been in San Diego when they were testing about 3 or 4 years ago. I saw some scientists that were testing the seals who were, like, dying, right? And I called them and I said, well, are you testing for radioactivity? They said, no, we specifically. I called them up and said, you know, because I had seen 13 of them say, no, we're specifically told not to test for radiation. And so I called them up. I said, why don't you just at least test for plutonium? They said, we can't. We don't. At most, they test for cesium-137 because that's identifiable. Plutonium, they don't test for because they don't know if it came from World War II or from Fukushima because of its half-life. They can't tell how far back it's generated. So there's plutonium everywhere. We have been bombarded with plutonium, as we're seeing in genetic mutations, in our weakening life cycles, in cancer rates, in the declining health decline, and in the sterility rates. You know, not just among humans. I mean, we are in a crisis on this planet caused by the technologists. And, you know, I mean, this is why I say our only place to go is love. We have to act in love and do the things that we are called to do. No matter even if it looks like it's not going to make a difference, we're still called to do it.
Because
it does make 100%. A difference. I think the universe will reward people for making
and
a difference.
Speaking out, our voices matter.
Yeah.
You know, just like you said, every voice matters, every single one.
That's right.
You know,
that's right.
You know, that's why I try to plug and share the voices of people that I think matter. I think Claudia is a good example of that.
Yes.
I love her so much. She has a tendency to get a little over the edge sometimes, but you do too. But I love you guys because you have to care.
That's so like even say, Richie Allen. Like, I love Richie Allen.
People just have to carry. They just have to care about it. Once people start caring, we are amazing in our ability to change things. You know, how do you stop people from caring? You divert them from understanding it. How do you do that? Well, what's one perfect way is, well, screens. Oh, here we are back at screens again. Isn't it ironic that because of this information highway, quote unquote, that we have, we are locked into watching cat videos on YouTube for 5 hours.
Exactly. Well, you know,
what have I been doing?
Yeah. Jules did a whole show on the dopamine that happens every time you pick up your cell phone. I mean, the information is out there that we're being manipulated. But you know what, Jerome? We've got 30 seconds left. This has gone really fast.
Oh,
so I really appreciate everybody listening. And thank you for joining us. We really do appreciate it here. And I hope you share our position that, yeah, things are grave, but life is still fabulous. It's still really great to live. So I'm one for life. You can catch Jerome at the Sane Environmentalist, Jerome's YouTube channel, The Sane Environmentalist. I'm nuts for art, although I've been dormant for a while. Please put your courage feet on. Thanks, Jerome, for joining me today.
All right, I'll talk to you later.
Bye-bye.